This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. It's been said that the late Gladys Black was the single most important person to bring the world of birds to the general public in Iowa. Black, who died in 1998 at the age of 90, never had formal training in ornithology, but she spent 35 years educating Iowans about their native birds. She tirelessly promoted habitat protection. Her newspaper columns about her birding observations appeared in the Des Moines Register from 1969 to 1987 and in three weekly newspapers in Marion County. Now two men who are also dedicated to Iowa's birds have written a new biography of Black. Larry Stone, an outdoor writer for the Des Moines Register for 25 years, and John Stravers of the National Audubon Society's Mississippi River Initiative have teamed up to write Gladys Black, The Legacy of Iowa's Bird Lady. We'll talk to the authors in 5 minutes following news. This is Talk of Iowa for this Monday. I'm Dennis Reese. The former ecologist for the Iowa State Preserves Advisory Board, Dean Rosa, writes, Gladys Black brought the science and hobby of bird watching to more people than probably any other person in the history of ornithology in Iowa. She was kind of Iowa's version of Rachel Carson. Now two dedicated ecologists and bird men, Larry Stone and John Stravers, have written a new biography of Black, who died in 1998 at the age of 90. Gladys Black, The Legacy of Iowa's Bird Lady. Stone and Stravers write, as a girl, she loved to watch buzzards played outside on a farm grow filled with birds, sneaked off to go hunting and fishing, and immersed herself in books. She came from a family of adventurers, pioneers, and hellions. Is it any surprise that very few things in Gladys's life could be called ordinary? Larry Stone is a former outdoor writer with the Des Moines Register and now is a freelance writer-photographer who lives near Elkader. John Stravers is Driftless Area Coordinator for the National Audubon Society's Mississippi River Initiative and writes songs for his musical group, Big Blue Sky. Gentlemen, good morning.
Hi, Dennis. Glad to be here.
Morning.
It's great to have you here. Thanks for driving down from Northeast Iowa so we can spend the hour talking about this amazing woman, Gladys Black, your new book, The Legacy of Iowa's Bird Lady. You know, she influenced, I'm guessing, thousands of Iowans over a long period of time to appreciate our native birds. And I have a quotation here, and I'll find it in a minute, from one of your, yes, here it is. You quote one of your contributors, one of the people you talked to for the book, as saying that thousands of people that Gladys exposed birds to will never forget that experience and will always look at birds a little differently than the average person. Now, that has been my experience, having read some of her columns and now that I've read your book. You do look at birds differently. It's a whole new approach, isn't it? John?
Certainly. Just the fact that we wrote the book together. I mean, we met because of Gladys, and certainly, Gladys had a huge impact on me. I mean, this is 30-some years later, and I'm still doing the same kind of work she showed me, still doing the same kind of methodology that she showed me, and still have that same spark that really influenced how we came together, so to speak.
And John Stone, I'm sure you would agree.
Well,
Larry Stone.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of bird watchers go out and identify a bird, come up with a list of birds that they've seen. Gladys's approach was a little bit different. She wanted to go out and learn more about that bird and get you involved in seeing what the bird was doing, the environment that the bird was around, and just the total experience as opposed to just a list of birds. And she really wanted you to learn something when you were out there.
And Larry, over the years, she worked with tens of thousands of Iowa school children, taking them out of the classroom and taking them outside and showing them birds. And not only birds, but lots of other animals as well.
Yeah, she worked on environmental ed projects. You know, she helped kids on their science projects. They had an outdoor days activity that they did at Lake Red Rock for probably 15 years where they had every sixth grader in Marion County would come for a day, and she would help, catch birds, band birds, let the kids hold the birds, tell them about the birds. But not just the birds, as you said. One former student said that they found a snake on this Outdoor Days, and some of the rambunctious sixth grade boys ended up killing the snake, and Gladys really gave them a lecture about the importance of all life, not mm-hmm. just birds.
And John Stravers, you're also known as the Hawk Man.
Is this true?
And I think there's a picture in the book of you holding a hawk, isn't it? And she would pick up birds. She would pick up large birds.
Sure. Yeah.
And how did she? There would had to be some magic there, because I think if I tried to pick up a big bird, I don't know. I don't know. I would.
She was a bold woman. She was a bold woman in any sense of the word. And there was a need at the time, because there really weren't the rehabilitators that we have now. And it was really had many layers, because it was not only was she trying to save the bird, birds would be brought to her because they were found or injured or had come out of the nest or something. She was trying to save the bird, but she always was then using that bird and that situation to try to advance our understanding of their needs. And so there's a lot of stories about stuff that she would do, you know, birds in her living room, birds in the cage. You know, it was all a circus, man.
And she lived in an old sort of Victorian house in Pleasantville near Des Moines. And the neighbors thought of her as a bit eccentric, but I think, you know, they loved her. And she let her yard go into a sort of a natural habitat, and I don't know if the neighbors appreciated that. John, when did you first meet her?
I called her. I had a red-faced screech owl that was wintering in a cavity right outside our kitchen window. We lived on an end of a dead-end road, and so I called her about that. And she then, after a long conversation about that, she sent me a long handwritten letter describing dichromatism because there's a red phase and a gray phase screech owls, and I didn't understand that, and she sent me a long letter. Well, then eventually, about a half a year later, we went out on a bird trip, and then my world just exploded at that moment, because then we started doing that regularly, and she really channeled me right into what I have been doing since that.
And Larry Stone, what about you? When did you first meet her?
Well, I was working for the Des Moines Register as their outdoor writer at the time in the early 1970s, and Gladys had a bit of a reputation already. She had started writing columns in the Des Moines Register, I think, in 1969. So anytime I would do a bird story, it was just logical that I should call up Gladys and talk to her. And she, I guess, sensed my interest, and she would often write me a letter or would call me about some interesting bird situation. And I ended up several times going out with her birding or getting photographs of her. And then in 1976, I was working on a series on rivers in Iowa. And I think I got a letter, or maybe Gladys even called me, and she said, you know, you ought to get a hold of this guy, John Stravers, because he goes bird watching from his canoe. And the rest is history. John and I went canoeing on a cold, wet, muddy day on the Skunk River, and we've been doing crazy stuff ever since, like this book about Gladys.
Bird watching from canoe, that's probably a good way to do it, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And I should mention here, interrupting, that I was kind of responsible for getting us into this situation, but Larry was really responsible for getting us out of it. He did the bulk of the writing, and I helped him, did some rewriting and help, but Larry really did a lot of the work of making this actually happen.
You guys have known each other for a long time, I gather.
Well, since 1976, when we did that canoe trip on the Skunk River, all because of Gladys.
Yeah. And I'm glad that that you spent the first couple of chapters introducing us to her early life, because it was very interesting. I found it very interesting to read about, especially her mother, who was also a character, apparently, and was very dedicated to nature. And her father, they moved around a bit, finally settled in Iowa. They lived in the South, didn't they, for a while?
Well, she was born east of Pleasantville in the farmhouse that she talked about, but her father was a farmer, and they did move around several places. Her family, I think, originally had come from Tennessee, but she was born in Iowa. But they had a farm grove, an old farmhouse. Well, she was born in 1909, so it was, fairly primitive conditions, but a farm grove where there were a lot of birds, and her mother was aware of birds, although she didn't really know the names of birds. So she would teach the kids the names or birds, but a red bird, that's what we call a cardinal and other names. But Gladys claimed she knew 25 species of birds by the time she was 7 years old. And one of her first memories, she said, is of the prairie chickens in the cornfield across the road from her house.
Yeah, you don't see those around much anymore, right?
There are a few in southern Iowa now, but they have been brought back. They were wiped out from the state for a number of years.
And she was a voracious reader and naturalist as a young girl. Her mother helped her with that, but then eventually decided on a nursing degree.
Yeah, she went to Mercy Hospital School of Nursing after she graduated from high school. She graduated from Pleasantville High School in 1926 and then went on to get her nursing degree at Mercy in Des Moines, and was a public health nurse for a number of years in Mahaska County and Clark County. She met her husband in Clark County and also did some nursing in Georgia, where she lived for a time.
Mm-hmm. That's you have to stop and think about that. This is the Depression in the 30s and the southern Iowa coal mining counties. And she was running these back roads, being the public nurse, dealing with issues like tuberculosis and some really poverty-stricken circumstances. I remember some stories that she told me. It was like, oh, it was amazing to think what she was doing then, okay, riding those roads by herself. And she said she couldn't even remember the number of times that she got pulled out of a mud road by a team of horses.
Well, you have some great photographs in the book of her as a child and her sister Ruby and her mom, mm-hmm. and just truly. How did you find all of these photographs? There's so much fun to look at these photographs.
Well, Gladys's niece, Colleen Prophet, who was the daughter of her sister Ruby, let us use a number of photographs, and there's also a number of photographs at the State Historical Society of Iowa. They have a large Gladys Black collection of her documents and photos and columns from the Register and some of her letters and a lot of those things. So it's a real treasure trove of history information about Gladys. So.
And Larry, how long did she write the Des Moines Register column? I know it started in the late 60s.
1969, she did her first one when she wrote a letter to Otto Knauth at the Register about hawks that she had seen. And it continued, I think the last column may have been about 1987.
Mm-hmm. But that's a lot of columns.
I don't know the number, but kind of sporadically, some times more than others, but she wrote for that period of time, yeah.
We need to take a break for about a minute. We'll be back in a minute with Larry Stone and John Stravers, author of the new book, Gladys Black, The Legacy of Iowa's Bird Lady. If you knew Gladys or you have questions or comments about her many Des Moines Register columns or any other observations you'd like to make, we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 or Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. Fresh Air continues on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese, along with co-authors of a new book about the great Gladys Black, Iowa's Bird Lady, Larry Stone and John Stravers. 866-780-9100. We're live this hour. If any memories you might have of Gladys, if you met Gladys, and if you have any stories to pass along, we'd like to hear those stories. And the email is also works well for that purpose. It is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Well, let's move along, gentlemen, to talk a little bit more about her life, nursing degree, and then she meets her husband, Wayne, they're a very close-knit couple. And unfortunately, Wayne passed away in 1956, so she didn't have a lot of years with him. He sounds like a remarkable man.
I think he was very supportive of Gladys. They were in Georgia most of the time. He was in the military in World War II and then worked at a military base in Georgia. But she got quite active in the community, not just in birding, but in church and other activities in the community. And she and Wayne were a very close couple in Georgia. So, but she did her first serious birding. You know, she had some publications and worked with the Georgia Ornithological Society down there. Came back to Iowa in 1956 after Wayne died to help her mother, who was having some health problems in Pleasantville. So then she was back in Iowa and Pleasantville from then on.
Well, we must emphasize that she was not ever formally trained in ornithology. She never took a college class or a biology class. Totally self-taught. John, that is, I am correct about that, right?
Yeah, it is a point. But the thing about that is she worked the journals. She studied. She had, when you say self-taught, yes, but she accessed so much information. I bet she drove the Pleasantville Library and crazy with requests for specific stuff. Because when I got to know her, she was so plugged in to specific recent research. She had this stuff, and she had it in her head, too. And she walked around and knew the number of flycatcher species in the Western Hemisphere. I mean, she just I self-taught, yeah. And there were some issues there that really have in some of the ornithological world, some of her they didn't pay much attention to her for some reason, and that really was a difficult point for her, and it was for me as too at that time that they didn't accept some of her findings, which was ludicrous, but stuff like that does happen.
Is that because she didn't have a degree, a college degree in biology or something?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was considered an amateur, but she was not a bashful amateur. If she needed some information, she would call up the authority. I think Great Gray Owls, I'm trying to think of the name of the expert on Great Gray Owls that she had a correspondence with, because she wanted to know about Great Gray Owls, and so she went right to the source to find that out.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I think about everything that she read or heard, she filed away in her mind and could retrieve. She had a remarkable memory and a remarkable mind.
And she did go on to be president, didn't she, of the Iowa Ornithologists?
Honorary.
Honorary, yeah.
But yeah. She was active in the IOU. One of the first things she did when she came back to Pleasantville was join the Iowa Ornithologists Union. She was on the resolutions committee, and one of the first resolutions they passed was, in essence, pay attention to your politicians, and if they're not doing what you want them to do, you get on their back and make sure that they know that you're interested in conservation.
So. I should mention she got an honorary doctorate from Simpson.
Absolutely,
College.
She was very proud of that too. Very proud of it. Yeah. Very deserving.
If you have a book from Gladys, it may be signed Dr. Gladys Black.
Let's go to a couple of calls. Callie is calling from Solon. Good morning, Callie.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Thanks for that call. I just wanted to say I was thinking about Gladys Black yesterday because I saw a dove sitting on her nest, a mourning dove, on a drain pipe. And she was just so beautiful sitting there. And the first time I knew about Gladys Black was when she was fighting the legislature to not have open season on doves because they nest early in the spring until late in the fall, and that there was no way you could not kill parents of nestlings. So I just wanted to share that she was in my mind yesterday and how important she is to me.
Callie, thanks so much. You know,
thanks, Callie.
We were going to get to that. That's on my list of topics to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And you were absolutely right. The reason apparently she was against the hunting of the doves was because they do nest so late. And I've noticed that because we have them around our house, and they still are hatching babies into, September or something?
Yeah, they can.
Yeah, all these years I have never seen one on her nest. I've never seen a nest before, but this one was right out on the Quaker Meeting House in West Branch, sitting on that drain pipe.
You know, the interesting thing was, some people thought Gladys was anti-hunting because she was so opposed to mourning dove hunting. In actuality, she hunted as a kid. She actually bought a hunting license every year. When she turned 65, she bought her lifetime license, and she supported, usually, wildlife management activities. But she was adamantly opposed to dove hunting just for that reason, because the doves can nest into September. The season would start September 1st, and it was just plain immoral to shoot a bird that might have young.
Well, and this was a huge controversy in the state legislature. I think the legislature, you write that the legislature approved the dove hunting, and then Governor Branstad vetoed it. Is that right, at the last second?
Actually, it didn't get through the legislature in the 70s. Gladys and some friends sued and stopped the Conservation Commission from holding the season. Then in, I think it was 2001, I believe it was, it did get through both houses of the legislature, and then it was Governor Vilsack that vetoed it. And in fact, he had given some indication that he might sign the bill before that, but I think there was a lot of public outcry after it passed the legislature, and phone calls and letters to Governor Vilsack persuaded him to veto it. So,
and that was after Gladys passed on.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Callie, for the call.
Okay.
Thanks, Callie.
Thank you.
Yes.
We want to talk some more about mourning doves. But first, let's go to Eldon, who's calling in. Eldon, good morning.
Well, good morning. I just had a few comments about Gladys. I hope my phone isn't messing up for you.
Well, it's cutting out a little bit, but we're okay, I think. Go ahead.
On Lee Klein's CD series, he has an interview with Gladys about mockingbirds in southern Iowa. And he said that she was extremely forceful in her presentation about they being there.
Yeah, forceful. She could be very forceful, right, guys?
Amen. Amen.
And Lee Klein used to have her on in the Sportsman Show on Sundays occasionally, and I always relished hearing her.
Yeah, she'd often would call in the Sportsman's Notebook with a report of what she happened to be seeing at Lake Red Rock that week. Mostly that. She often would get in a little gig about her opposition to pesticides or. At the time, why hunters should not be using lead shot for waterfowl hunting, or some of those political issues. She wasn't bashful about speaking her mind, giving her opinion.
Well, I certainly enjoy your program this morning discussing her, and I'm sure I'm going to be getting your book that you have published.
Okay, thanks a lot, Eldon.
Thanks, Eldon.
Thanks,
Eldon.
Call.
Before we go to a break, we might mention, gentlemen, how to where the book is published and how to get a hold of the book for people who want to. Order the book.
We're getting it into a number of independent bookstores. You also can get it on my website, which is www.larrystonesiowa.com. So that's probably the easiest way right now. It may be in some of the bigger stores later, but independents right now is where it is.
Okay, good that you're starting with the independents. One thing I have to admit, we have just a few seconds before the break. We'll take about a 5-minute break. Reading about mourning doves, all these years I thought it was spelled like the time of day.
I know.
And it's spelled M-O-U-R-N.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I learned that. What is the background on that, just briefly?
Because of the call being kind of lamentive.
Oh, the call is
nice.
But it's such a beautiful call.
It is.
Okay, well. That's extremely interesting. We want to.
You're probably not the only one who's had that experience, Dennis.
Okay. We'll take a quick break and get back to Talk of Iowa with Larry Stone and John Stravers, authors of the new book, Gladys Black, Legacy of Iowa's Bird Lady. We'll take your calls, 866-780-9100. Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese, talking about a very interesting and really wonderful new book called Gladys Black, Legacy of Iowa's Bird Lady. The co-authors are Larry Stone and John Stravers. Larry wrote an outdoor column for the Des Moines Register for a long time, and now he is a freelance writer and photographer and lecturer. He lives near Elkader, where he and his wife manage woodlands and small prairies. And John Stravers, also known as the Hawkman, is here. He is a Driftless Area Coordinator for the National Audubon Society's Mississippi River Initiative, and write songs for the musical group Big Blue Sky. We are talking this hour about Gladys Black. And just to conclude our mourning dove discussion. Do you think, gentlemen, that this issue is now dead for forever, that we'll never have a mourning dove hunting season, or will it always be an issue that's going to be coming back to the state legislature?
Forever is a long time.
Yeah,
I think it probably will come up again. And frankly, I sometimes irritate both my bird watching friends and my hunting friends when I say, you know, why don't we devote our time and our energy and our money to other discussions, such as the sustainable funding issue that's coming up next fall in the legislature, as opposed to the relatively insignificant issue, although it's an emotional issue, of whether or not we should hunt mourning doves.
Yeah, and but you do clarify, Larry, that she was not against hunting. We talked about that. She was not against it, but I'm sure she had a lot of detractors who probably assumed that she was.
Right, yeah, and there's some people, avid hunters. You mentioned the name Gladys Black, and the air turns blue because
Bristle.
They say, "Yeah, that's why we can't hunt mourning doves in Iowa."
Mm, yeah,
two things from that I remember clearly hearing about, because I wasn't at the hearing, but there are people at the legislative hearing talked about her coming in and taking over the room. And if you knew Gladys, you realize such could happen. And the quote we heard from Conservation Commission officials when Fred Prewert, who was the director, who had no idea what was going to happen at that hearing, came out of the meeting and he said he felt he got hit by a bolt of lightning.
Mm. Well, she was so blunt, right?
Forceful.
Forceful. She could use some kind of salty language, too, from time to time, right?
Yeah, and not bashful about stating her opinion in such a way that you were a little bit afraid to challenge her on it, because that she it was gospel if she said it.
Yeah, and she was also, I want to mention her concern with pesticides.
Poisons is the word she liked to use. Poisons.
Was she really our own Rachel Carson, sort of?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, she was really raising the flag often and strongly. And, boy, at that time it was needed. I mean, some of this has changed. I think perhaps some of it hasn't changed a bit. But it was a different age, and it was really – you know, when she was first talking about it, DDT hadn't been banned yet. And there was a whole bunch of it. I mean, one of the issues she worked with closely was heron rookery at Lake Red Rock, that birds were trying to nest there, and they never produced young that was ever documented. And indeed, when they did some analysis of the eggs, when finally she raised enough dickens that somebody finally collected an egg, and they realized they were all, what's the term?
Contaminated with pesticides. I think she said there were about 10 different pesticides that the researchers at Iowa State University found in the egg. So it was proved her point that she'd been trying to make for a couple or 3 years, was that the pesticides were affecting the birds.
And that situation has improved over the last decade or so, hasn't it, really?
I think so. The chemicals that we are using now, some people would argue we still use too many, but that they're not as persistent or maybe not as toxic in some cases as some of the ones we used to use.
866-780-9100. Let's go to Pam in Bettendorf. Good morning, Pam. You're on Talk of Iowa. Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I heard John speak at a local Audubon meeting maybe six weeks ago, and really enjoyed his talk about hawks. And I purchased the Agnes book and have so enjoyed it. I just devoured it. I think I read it in 3 days. And so I thank you for putting that history together and affirming a woman who is so enthusiastic about birds, because I love watching birds but don't begin to have her knowledge. But my comment is, or question is, just if you're going to be talking about more of John's work with hawks and mentioning the eco cruise that you do on, what's the boat, the Heron? Do I have the right name?
I work on the Mississippi Explorer out of Prairie du Chien, but there is a blue heron out of Clinton County Conservation Board runs it out of the Lower Wapsie Pinnacan near Rock Creek Park. It's a really good boat and a really good cruise in a really good area.
Oh, excellent. Well, don't you do some kind of eco-cruise, though, where you've got music and you encourage people to come and enjoy the natural waters.
Yes, yes, and yes, of course.
And, John, do you have a website that people can go to learn more?
Yeah, there's a couple of things you can check. MississippiExplorer.com, and they have both birdwatching cruises and music cruises. And during the music cruises, we stop and turn off all the instruments and listen, okay? Everybody in the boat has to be quiet for this certain amount of time that I dictate. And I'm always the one who breaks the silence. Did you hear that? It's a cerulean. It's a cerulean, you know? So the other one to check is BigBlueSkyProject.com, because that has various things like we're giving presentations at the Decorah Library and the McGregor Library, but also the music cruises on the Mississippi Explorer, and also events that might be land-based but are all about music and all about the connection to the environment. And so Gladys lives in that as well. I don't remember much about her music knowledge, but that connection that she first stirred or cultivated in me is very much alive. And she was always bringing this to the students, to everybody all the time. And so I don't separate my worlds. I'm a bird researcher. I've been doing research on red-shouldered hawks for 33 years now, but when I get up and do the music, I don't separate the music from that bird research. So the stuff that I live and do comes out in the songs, and so Gladys surfaces in all kinds of areas, so to speak.
Well, thank you so much for all your work.
Thanks for your call, Pam.
Thanks, Pam.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for the call. She influenced so many neighbor kids over the years, and one family especially with several kids were spent. I mean, she basically adopted them and would kind of toss them in the 1960 Rambler and take off for woodlands to observe nature, and the kids loved her.
And that was the era, the family, you know, if Gladys wanted to do something, you know, fine. Whatever you wanted to do, take off with Gladys and go do it for a day. And they would, you know, she would take them on all kinds of field trips. And, of course, people now know her as the bird lady, but a lot of those kids also knew her as the butterfly lady because one of the things that they did was capture butterflies to tag monarch butterflies. And it wasn't just that. You know, they talked about wildflowers, sometimes gathering wild foods, sometimes, you know, putting up bluebird houses and just all kinds of explorations like that with Gladys. And those kids to this day talk about their love of the outdoors and the environment because of Gladys's influence.
She had a woodland / pasture that she liked to go to, and we found one of her maps that she had this all thing laid out with the trees, the fence line, the creek, and she had all the nests of all the birds, various various species, everything from mockingbirds to loggerhead shrikes to robins to kingbirds to mourning doves to she had these all mapped out, and these kids would go out with her helping her find the nest, and then she'd take these kids out and show them the nest. What else was in there? Phoebes.
Yeah, one of the things that she came up with was on a long pole. She took an old mirror off an old rear or side view mirror off a car, and they would have it on a long pole so they could reach up and look into the nest with the mirror and see what was in the nest. So the kids talk about that and all they learned by going out with Gladys on these projects.
Yeah, and I want to go to an email, and maybe you I think you guys will know what Beth is talking about, but I may mess up the pronunciations here. She says it was Beth is writing in. It was Robert Nero who Gladys communicated with. Now you're shaking your head, so this makes sense to you. It was Robert Nero who Gladys communicated with for years. She also wrote to Louise de Kerline Lawrence, and I'm sure I blew that, and Margaret Morris' niece, who did research on woodpeckers and song sparrows, respectfully. How about her work on DDT is the question.
So, is this Beth Brown?
I don't know. I just have a first name.
Oh, okay.
I'll bet it is. But yeah, Gladys, in Iowa, I'd like to bugged the Conservation Commission officials at that time about the impacts of DDT on, and other pesticides on the wildlife. And she was sort of a crusader at that time. And I think DDT nationwide was banned in 71 or 72, and I think about the same time, or maybe there were some Iowa regulations as well that Gladys was quite involved in.
Well, she would chew out a neighbor who might be spraying some pesticides on his lawn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or a farmer who might have bulldozed a fence row or something like that. She was quite upset when the pasture where she had done nesting studies for years and years, I think maybe it changed hands, and then the new owner bulldozed it out and I think planted corn, and she was livid about that, the habitat destruction, and it was she just didn't think anyone should change things that way.
Chapter 13 is called The Mother of Wildlife Rehabilitation in Iowa. Do you want to talk about that?
So she actually was probably one of the first and bringing birds into her house just because they needed somebody to care for them. There was a bit of a humorous story, I think it was early 1970s she was doing this just because it needed to be done. Technically, you should have had a permit to do these things. One of the conservation officers at the time, Rick McGew, was stopped in to visit her, and she was proudly showing what she was doing, and he sort of said something about permits, and she didn't have a clue about permits. So Rick carefully helped her document everything and took the paperwork into the Des Moines office. But he when he went into his boss, he says, "Yeah, I saw Gladys Black today, and I wrote her a ticket."
Busted her.
just joking. The boss didn't think it was funny because they knew, a lot of people knew Gladys Black, and they thought, oh, they're in big trouble if the word got out that Gladys Black had been busted. But that didn't happen. Rick went ahead and got her the permits, and so she continued to be one of the leaders in wildlife rehabilitation, helped found the Iowa Wildlife Rehabilitators Association, I think it is, and was quite active in that for a number of years.
I was really amazed that she would keep birds in the house, big birds, just in the house. And she made the comment that, she would have to scrape the droppings off her wall.
She did. I remember bringing my kids, John Jr. and Lisa, they're about 3 and 4 at the time, maybe 5 and 4. And I asked them if they remembered that. Oh, yeah, Dad, the screech owls were flying around the house, and they were like, holy cow, And it freaked them out a little bit, but then they were just kind of amused about it. Then afterwards they were trying to process that, because they were just flying around the living room, So it helped them prepare some of the stuff I was going to give them as being a little more normal maybe.
Go ahead, Larry.
Well, she had a fair amount of antique furniture, some pretty nice furniture in her house. And if she had birds in for a long period of time, she might throw a blanket or a piece of plastic over the furniture to protect it. But she didn't get real excited about those things, just like she didn't get real excited about housekeeping. And for that reason, she didn't often invite people into her house. But if you came to see a specific bird, and specifically she had a snowy owl, I think, in the winter of 1981 that she rehabilitated in her house. And she had scores of people talk about coming to Gladys's house, and she invited them in to see and photograph Nikki, the snowy owl. So if it was, the owl was more important than whether or not she was keeping her house clean.
Well, the birds were in there just for until they were ready to go back into the wild.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
When you were putting this book together, Larry and John, I'm sure you talked to so many people, you quote so many people who knew her. You must have discovered that her influence is more extensive than you maybe were expecting. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, and John was the one that actually came up with the idea for the book. We'd done another book together on a guy named Sylvan Runkel, and we who was an Iowa naturalist. And after we finished that, John said, "Okay, now we got to start on Gladys." And I knew he was right because I knew Gladys was an interesting person, and she'd had an impact on John. I thought, well, she'll be an interesting story. But the more people we talked to, we suddenly realized that this was way bigger than we had thought, just because of her dramatic impact on so many different people in so many different ways, from, you know, the neighbor kids to dove hunters to, you know, pesticides and conservation issues in the state, the chickadee checkoff, the REAP funding in the state. You know, she was actively involved in all these. And then other people who remembered Gladys from the programs that she had given, and her outdoor days with kids, just all these. John likes to call it the Gladys tree. John, talk more about the Gladys tree.
Well, certainly that there's several different ways that we discovered more of our own knowledge too, because I would bring her sheets of, she would write handwritten letters to anybody who asked about any issue or any letter. So she really had a huge impact. And I think that there's a ripple effect, because she had an impact on, just like that Callie from Solon called about remembering about the mourning doves and Gladys, there are so many people around the state that she had a direct influence on. She opened up their eyes, their world, their thinking. And so that in turn, I think, just the ripple effect of those people then having a positive effect and maybe carrying the story one level further. I think we knew she had a significant legacy, but I think in the process of accumulating this information, we found out that that legacy was bigger and broader. And it's from kids, it's from scientists, it's from politicians, it's from agency biologists, it's from school teachers. It's across the board. Okay, she had a huge impact on a lot of people from various different backgrounds. And, you know, she was so distinctive, so forceful, so bold. And so if you could see her in her element, too, she was bright-eyed, and she may have been not big in stature, but she cut a strong path. There was no doubting her force, her bold nature, or her passion for the thing, for the environment and for birds. And so that lives on, and I think – Larry mentioned that we call this the Gladys tree. Actually, I think Dave Kester is one who gave me that name. But that continues, because I try to impact people, students, kids, the same way that Gladys influenced me. And so that tree goes on.
What was it like to go birdwatching with her? Was she quiet, or was it sort of like
a, No, she had her little list, and she would write down everything, but there was never an unimportant bird, okay? And especially those first few trips that I took with her, every bird had a reason for being there. It had a story behind it. It had some piece of recent research that she had read about. It had some deeper understanding of what that bird needed, or it's just amazing. Everything had something deeper than just that mark on your bird list, so to speak. And it never – and honestly, I only got to go on a few of those, and then she expected me to go do on my own. She didn't – you know, I didn't need her anymore. She wanted me to go do exactly what I needed to do and influence other people. So – but it was a circus, because she was just always looking and always ready for anything. And she had her little lunch packed with her. And she was a striking figure, always dressing in black and her Iowa Ornithologist Union goldfinch hat. And she's quite a person, man.
Well, she must, you know, if she were still alive today, she would probably be happy, wouldn't she? I mean, the birds have made some progress in Iowa. Mm. We have hawks and eagles now. Mm. And you must be thrilled, just thrilled to death, John, about the hawk population coming back. They're just, you know, you see them in subdivisions all over the state. It's absolutely amazing. Aren't you thrilled at that?
Oh, of course. I mean, there are several bright examples that you know, we could attribute to people like Gladys and Rachel Carson, because at the time when I was first getting into the raptor research, there was only a single active bald eagle nest in Iowa, and only a single active one anywhere on the upper Mississippi River. And now there's hundreds in Iowa, and there's in 100-mile stretch of the Mississippi River, there's at least 80 active bald eagle nests, okay, and there's hundreds up and down the river. So that's a remarkable recovery that even when that recovery was starting to happen, none of us in the raptor world had any idea that it would grow to be this big. And, of course, at the time Gladys was doing her writing, peregrine falcons had been extirpated from the entire eastern half of the United States. And now, because they've been reintroduced to various places now, we have them nesting in the cities, but also on rock bluffs along the Mississippi, because a small group of dedicated conservationists led by Bob Anderson and Dave Kessler have hacked out peregrines on the bluffs at Effigy Mounds, and now those birds have gone back to repopulate the old traditional peregrine falcon eyries on the Mississippi River. So Gladys would love that story.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so very, very much. I've enjoyed this. Larry Stone, John Stravers, thanks for making the trip down from Northeast Iowa. Appreciate it. The book is wonderful. And
One more plug, where to get it, LarryStonesIowa.com.
LarryStonesIowa.com. Thanks very much, Larry. And John, that's Talk of Iowa for today. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Our theme music written by Dan Knight. Our student assistant today was Rosalind Sixby. I'm Dennis Reese.